we just don't focus on any of that stuff. You know, I hear it, and it's, I hope we do, you know, but our goal has always been to win every game, you know, improve every month. I've said that since I've been here. This team has to go through these types of experiences to win big. You know, being number one in the West would be a huge accomplishment for us, but it's just not our focus. We just want to win every game we can, and if that means we're number one in the West, then great.
Monty Williams, head coach of the Phoenix Suns, following last night's 117-113 win over the Utah Jazz, one of the better games in the NBA this season. It was back and forth. You had great individual performances. I thought the defensive performances by both teams were fantastic. And the Suns, defensively, I thought their strong point, Bick, was the way they defended the three-pointer. Utah will kill you from the three-point line. When they got really, really red hot, they were just skewering teams from behind the arc, and they are making 20 plus on a regular basis. They made 11 three-pointers last night, but they took 44 of them. You'll take that percentage all the time. Here's another one from Monty Williams talking about how key that was, limiting the Jazz and the damage they did from the three-point line.
I mean, they averaged 17 makes. You know what I mean? They averaged 43 attempts with 17 makes. So that's a win for us. I thought the ones we gave up on the backside, when we got too high up in pick and roll coverage and let Gobert get behind us, we had to come help, and we gave, those are the ones that you hate because those are the catch shot ones. There was one where we went under on a screen on Ingles out of a timeout. You know, that's one you don't want to give up. But other than that, to force teams to shoot off the dribble threes, contest them without fouling, is a huge win for us, especially if you think about what we did earlier in the season. That's a bit of growth for us.
Yeah, that one that he mentioned in that soundbite from Ingles was, it was weird. It was out of a timeout, and the Suns came to the court with a lineup. You're like, wait, we don't see these kind of lineups very often. It was like five really good defensive players on the floor at the same time that don't play together that often, and they immediately got the three. But overall, that was one of the few breakdowns we saw. It was just a top-to-bottom, encouraging game for the Suns. And I know what the Valley sports fan experience is like when we in the media and we on shows like this, we hype up these games. This is the biggest game of the year. This is the biggest game of Devin Booker's career.
Right.
More often than not, the Phoenix experience is, they fell flat. They didn't get it done. Back to the drawing board. For them to, you know, stand toe-to-toe with Utah and beat them at their game, man, that was, you know, if I was buying stock in the, if you could buy stock in the Suns, I'd buy it right now.
Yeah, I think that this is, they've beaten the Jazz twice now, so they've got a tiebreaker edge on them. I've heard Monty Williams and Devin Booker talk about that number one seed. It's something the basketball team wants, even though it scares me a little bit. I don't know if I want to be the number one seed entering the playoffs, but it would be quite an accomplishment. It would be an unbelievable accomplishment. And it looks like it's within their grasp. Now, let's see them sustain this. If they do this again tonight, if DA comes out and is there all game long tonight, then I think you can really kind of say, all right, yeah, we've really got a shot at this. And I think you're right. I think a lot of times when we have the big buildup events, they're always disappointing. In some way or another, they always seem to disappoint.
Yes.
And last night was not the case. And the way the Suns jumped out to that early lead, the way the crowd was into it. Like I said, you watch the games on television, you don't really get a flavor of the crowd. The noise I heard from the game from the crowd really outpaced how many fans I could see when you rarely got a crowd shot. So the ones who were there last night were really into it.
Yeah.
And that's a really good sign, because there was a long period of time, Vinny, when even when the Suns might be in the midst of a good run, when there was no energy in that building at all. We've had many conversations during your reign as a PA announcer there of how the crowd just was not really reacting appropriately.
Now
fans who go to the game, they know they've got a live basketball team. They know they got a real basketball team.
Yeah, I mean, and we kind of talked about it, but, you know, in my experience this year, you know, you start playing games in empty arenas, it's weird. 1,500 people let in. You expect, okay, there's going to be a little bit of noise. It was not very noticeable. With 3,000, most of the time it was not very noticeable. Last night it was definitely noticeable. We talked about it on yesterday's show. What the Suns have done to this point is very impressive. Obviously they've marked themselves as we're for real. This is a real basketball team to contend with, but in a lot of ways we had identified this is the start of another level of this season.
Right.
And the Suns answered the call. The fans answered the call. It was fantastic all the way around.
Yeah, it really, really was. I really like what I saw out of DA last night. I still, for the life of me, don't understand the polarizing nature of DA among some people. Even Gambo tweeted out last night to the DA haters. He asking, what do you think of DA now to the DA haters? And a lot of people forwarded me on that as if he were talking about me. To the people who think I'm hating on DeAndre Ayton, you either are following your own agenda or you're listening to words I'm not saying. Or you're a moron.
Look, I can't help that was forwarded to you. And I'm not saying that you are in that category, but there are a lot of people that are their one thought on DeAndre Ayton is he's soft, he sucks, he's got to go.
Okay, those people are equally moronic. And the thing about DeAndre Ayton, have we not seen growth?
Absolutely.
Isn't Chris Paul responsible for a lot of the growth we've seen? So DeAndre Ayton is the one making this story. This isn't about who was right or who was wrong. He's making this a success for himself because he's being pushed.
And by the way, he had 18 and 12 last night. His statistics were not that much different than his statistics always are. But if you watch the game, you saw how much more impactful he was, how big the rebounds he was getting were, how big the defensive plays were, how he was putting back slam dunks.
Yeah, so, he's gotten a lot better. These last five games or so, he's just been there pretty much the entire game.
Well,
he's had a couple of bad beginnings to games, but he's been there, and he hasn't been benched. It wasn't that long ago that Monty Williams was sitting him in the fourth quarter. So this is a DA success story, and this is not about who's right and who's wrong. That's never the case. Everything that I've been critical of DeAndre Ayton about, I believe, and he's getting better. He's addressing those issues, and the issues were pretty obvious to anybody who knows basketball. And if you don't, I can't help you. So the thing about DA too is, Kellen Olson pointed this out in his story today, and I think he's right on the money with this. The best thing about DA is his vibe as a teammate, that he allows himself to be screamed at and doesn't go into his shell, that he wants to make it work, that he wants to make people happy. Chris Paul got all over him last night at one point in time. I'm sure you heard every word of it.
Yep.
And he accepts that stuff, and he tries. So that stuff is of real value to me.
Well,
and so I really like the way that he played. I really like he wasn't afraid to bang against Rudy Gobert. He got key rebounds in the fourth quarter. He was active. He played like a big, and that's fabulous.
Look,
because if he keeps this up, this team has got a real chance to win a title.
He had 18 and 12 with two steals, three blocks. Rudy Gobert was good. He hit all of his shots. A couple of them were garbage, I thought. He had some lucky bounces. He had 16 and 18. He didn't have a block shot. DeAndre Ayton was a bigger defensive presence last night for the Phoenix Suns than Defensive Player of the Year Rudy Gobert was for the Utah Jazz.
And that was what I was hoping that was the challenge I was hoping he would accept last night, to not look at Rudy Gobert and go, wow, that guy is good.
Yeah, because
but I'm taking you out.
Yeah, here he was talking about competing against Gobert.
Competing with Gobert, that's the defensive player of our league, you know, and you know. Him being a presence on both ends of the floor, you're going to have to bring your A game. As a strong, physical dude, he knows the game. And I learned a lot, too. And really strong dude. And, you know, just playing against him, matching his energy. And you just got to be ready to play, man. You just got to really study, watch for him, and see these type of dudes' tendencies to really be locked in a game like this, down the stretch especially.
We talk about it all the time. We've talked about it for three seasons now. DeAndre Ayton is a kid in a man's body.
Mm-hmm.
And
true.
We're starting to see the kid grow up.
even the subtlety in that comment he just made, because in past years he would have been like, oh man, Rudy Gobert, he's so awesome.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't believe I'm out here with Rudy Gobert. That was,
right.
This one he was like, I knew I was playing against Rudy Gobert, so I knew I had to match his intensity. I knew I had to match his physicality. That, you know,
he's got hardcore dudes in his ear is what he's got. And it's helping him. It's helping him grow. And that is, again, that's another piece of brilliance with the Chris Paul acquisition. It really, really is.
The Chris Paul and Jay Crowder signings were exactly what the team needed. It's amazing how well it's working.
Yeah. Listen, I've told you guys this. It was Jay Crowder was acquired on a Saturday. I want to believe it.
Yeah.
The reason I remember that is I remember just being blown away by it because I didn't think Jay Crowder was available. And just in my mind's eye, I'm like, that's the perfect fit for this team.
Yeah, that's the kind of player that helps teams win championships.
Exactly.
Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance every weekday to win $500. Text the word bonus to 620-620 to register and listen for your name at 735, 135, and 335 for your chance at the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Once again, that's bonus to 620-620. Final game of the season opening road trip today for the D-backs in Denver against the Rockies. D-backs on deck is up next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the Bacon Jam Cheeseburger for a limited time, only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
Yeah, Cattell is doing okay. He felt his leg cramping up as he was running down the line. So he was trying to put on the brakes and protected the best that he could. We're not exactly sure the extent of what is happening there right now. He's going to continue to be evaluated for the rest of the night. And through the night and then on into tomorrow. So I'll have more of an update or a better feeling as to what the official diagnosis is in the coming day or so.
Yeah, Torey Lovello last night after a game that went south for the D-backs in Denver. They lose 8-0 to the Rockies. Their modest two-game winning streak snapped. But they also lose Ketel Marte, at least for the game and at least for today. Ketel Marte, who's been one of the best players in baseball early on for the first week of the season, hitting .462 so far. He leaves with a hamstring issue. And I know Torey Lovello said maybe we'll know more today. Mm-hmm. With the D-backs coming home after today's game, probably get a much clearer picture going into the weekend against Cincinnati.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is the one, and you were right when you said earlier that the amount of dings that this baseball team has encountered already is crazy. From Cole Calhoun to everybody, they've really been affected by injuries.
And, well, your best home run hitter, your
Cole
best
Calhoun,
starting pitcher,
your best
defensive player, and your best overall player.
Well, yeah. Other than that, everything's great.
And maybe your most reliable mid-relief guy.
Now, I don't know. I'm a little curious as to exactly what this injury might be, because for it to be first referred to as a cramp, that to me is, you don't hear that a lot in basketball. You hear that from tennis players, basketball players, football players. You don't get cramps in baseball.
And anybody, you know, people listening right now, me and you, you've had hamstring cramps. They're incredibly painful.
Oh, yeah, they are.
But it's not like tearing or pulling anything.
No.
You can get over that pretty quick.
No.
So hopefully, cross your fingers, it was just cramping.
Yeah, that would be nice, even though I think that's pretty rare. But this is a tough time for this baseball team to have to kind of to get through. It would have been hard enough for them to compete even with a full roster.
Yeah.
And they certainly haven't had that.
Well, it's an interesting lineup today. Tim LeCastro leading off playing center. Josh Van Meter at second base batting second. Christian Walker in the three slot at first. Cleanup hitters David Peralta in left. Pavin Smith getting the start in right field today. He's the fifth hitter. Eduardo Escobar
And we'll get to him in a little bit. He's at the sixth spot, hitting third, playing third. Steven Vogt, the catcher, seventh. Geraldo Perdomo gets another start at shortstop, hitting eighth. And Merrill Kelly, the pitcher, which is a good time to take a look at today's pitching matchup. And it's brought to you by Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Good lawyers, changing lives. For the Colorado Rockies today, it's right-hander John Gray, who a couple years ago, you may remember him, right about the time that Diamondbacks-Rockies wild card game in 2017, he was a star on the rise.
Yeah,
it hasn't gone that way for John Gray, but he is making his second start of the season this year, and he pitched really well on Saturday against the Dodgers in his first start. He went five innings, allowed four hits, only one run, struck out seven, walked one. Bullpen didn't do the job. Dodgers won that game 6-5. He's made 12 career starts against the D-backs. Gray has 4-5 with a 5.34 lifetime ERA. And the one batter that's had a lot of success against Gray lifetime in the D-backs lineup today, David Peralta, who, interestingly enough, is 12-for-26, hitting .462 against Gray, but only one of those 12 is an extra base hit. Little weird stat.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. And I think you're right. There was a time when that kid was considered an up-and-coming star, that he was going to be that good and influential.
Chased early in that wild card game.
That's right. Remember that? And
yeah.
He's kind of been silenced ever since.
D-backs counter with right-hander Merrill Kelly. Second start for him this year. He was not as good as Gray in his first start. He went four innings last Friday against the Padres, gave up five hits, three earned runs, three walks, four strikeouts. And he took the loss, and he's not pitched well historically either against the Rockies or at Coors Field. Three starts lifetime against the Rockies, 7.64 ERA, 7.71 ERA at Coors Field, which we know is a very, very tough place to play and pitch. And so there's your pitching matchup brought to you by Berg Simpson Law Firm. And, you know, now we'll take a look at the keys to the game.
I am the key master.
D-backs keys to the game. Brought to you by San Chevrolet. Sands makes it easy. Shop how and where you want. Online in the new San showroom. Find new roads at sanchevrolet.com.
My key to the game, Beck, is very simple. Hit the ball.
Yeah.
Ketel Marte has been hitting the ball. Not really anybody else with consistency. Carson Kelly's been off to a good year. He's not in the lineup today. Asdrubal Cabrera has been pretty good offensively, not in the lineup today. I'm looking at a guy that we were all pointing to as bounce-back candidate, maybe number one, and that was Eduardo Escobar, who 2 years ago in 2019 was fantastic for the D-backs.
Right.
He was not good last year. Everybody pointed to the weight. He came in shape. He started the season 1-for-21, Vic. Eight strikeouts.
Brutal. Yeah.
0-48.
Yeah.
Got to hit the ball.
Yeah, he was swinging and missing an awful, awful lot. Listen, I think to me, I'm already hearing from a lot of people who have noticed this Diamondbacks team looks like they don't have enough energy, that they don't have enough fire in them. We heard this a lot last year. We hear this whenever they have a team that cannot mount any offense. The two can be synonymous at times. Teams that don't hit and don't score runs look like they're not trying very hard.
Uh-huh.
It's just kind of a weird phenomenon. So I think you're right. I think getting some runs across early just to stop this, if you will, that would be a key. So I agree with you. Also, you know, it'd be nice to get a quality start from a starting pitcher. And it's I know this rotation is damaged. I know this rotation wasn't very good to begin with, but they really need to get one of these games like the Rockies got last night.
Yeah, I mean,
it can be done. You can do this. You can pitch a good game in Colorado.
You've
got to be really good.
With Zach Gallen out, though, it's become like a starting rotation-wide issue, that the issues pop up for all these guys individually, but it's the same story. It's not getting deep into the game. It's high pitch counts, putting a lot of pressure on the bullpen.
Right.
I think that would be good for Merrill Kelly to settle down and get back to his 2020 form last night. Quick look at the MLB standings brought to you by PNC Bank, financial tools and tech to help make things easier. Looking at the standings, hey, guess who's atop the National League West after 1 week? It's the Dodgers and the Padres.
Wow.
The Dodgers at 5-2. They blew one yesterday. They could have been 6-1. Yep. They gave the A's their first win of the season. San Diego a game back at 4-3. San Francisco's at 3-3. And then the Diamondbacks and Rockies playing for sole possession of fourth place today.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Yeah, this is going to be, we've had some long baseball seasons. I think this one's going to be one of the longest.
You might be right. I mean, elsewhere around baseball, the teams that got off to a hot start and, you know, there wasn't much expected of the Cincinnati Reds, they're off to a 5-1 start in the NL Central. They're in town this weekend. And I think when we looked at the schedule early on, you're like, okay, you got to start in San Diego. Oof. Go play in Colorado. You never know what's going to happen there. But at least you get a little bit of a soft landing with your home opener. The Reds are playing great. The Reds, Phillies, and Astros all tied at 5-1 going into today's action.
Yeah, good starts for them.
Yeah.
Even with all the jeering and garbage cans banging, the Astros are off to good. Zach Greinke's off to a great start. He's had two really good starts so far for Houston. So, yeah.
Inflatable trash cans showing up in Anaheim.
That's right.
There you go. There is your look at the MLB standings. D-backs and Rockies, the series finale coming up on ESPN 620 AM.
You've been listening to D-backs on Deck. Brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the Bacon Jam Cheeseburger for a limited time only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com. Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford Poll Question on the homepage of ArizonaSports.com. How do you feel about the Sean Miller firing? Agree? Disagree? Should have happened earlier.
See. Should have happened earlier.
Also.
64% say yes, should have happened earlier. 29% say they agree. 7% say they disagree.
I didn't like that Dave Hickey press conference one bit yesterday. It was so evasive and weird.
It was time. Why was it time? You want transparency in college athletics?
Yeah. Right. I know.
That is today's Sanderson Ford poll question. You can vote on it right now. It's on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com.
Bickley and Murata. Mock my world.
Stop mocking me!
Brought to you by V's Barbershop.
It has been a while. I think we're all going to be very rusty. And apparently a couple of us were rusty the last time we played Mock My World. Back on March 18th. I didn't even remember what the category was, but it was best careers for athletes before they got to Arizona. Dan Bickley flexing his muscles.
Really?
With 44.4% of the vote.
What was our topic?
Best careers before coming to Arizona.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay.
You had Shaq, Terrell Suggs, Kurt Warner, Mark Grace. You eked out a win over Jared, who had 39.5%. He had Emmett Smith, Adrian Peterson, Chris Paul, Zach Greinke. Sarah came in third, 8.7%. You had Madison Bumgarner, Vince Carter, Tyson Chandler, and Chris Johnson. And my team of J.J. Watt, Brett Hull, Roberto Alomar, and Charles Barkley. I got Barkley in the fourth round, and I got 7.4% of the vote.
Wow.
Gads! So today, we will have a new topic. The topic today is things and objects named after famous people. Or people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Question.
Yes.
Are fictional characters,
yes.
Do they count? Okay, so things named after fictional characters,
okay.
Yes or no?
Sure.
That's just clarifying.
The only caveat is no places.
Yeah, because so no cities or states.
Oh. Every state and city is pretty much named.
So I know you wanted to take Leningrad with your first
year. Obviously.
You
can't. Right.
Named after John Lennon.
You can't do that.
Yes, famously named after John Lennon.
I thought it was Sean Lennon.
Oh, yeah.
So in reverse order of the last results, I will go first. Sarah will pick second. Jarrett third. Bick fourth. Snake style, four-round draft. And, wow, I don't even know where to go with the number one overall pick.
Yes, you do.
I do?
Don't you? I think this is one of those ones where the number one pick is a big advantage. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see.
It's evading me right now.
I'm looking at my list. Yeah.
I'll go with a refreshing drink of iced tea and lemonade. and Arnold Palmer.
Ding, 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 ding. I think that's the impact term.
That's a good one. You should have just picked Ice-T, named after famous rapper Ice-T.
Yeah, that's right.
Stop.
All right, Sarah.
Okay, I am going to take the Stanley Cup, named after a real person from Canada.
First, or I guess it's his last name, Stanley.
Yeah. Lord Stanley.
It's like Arthur.
Lord
Stanley.
His first name was Lord.
Lord Stanley. Right. Well, since we got a Lord, I'm next, right? Yes, I am going to pick the Sandwich, named after the Earl of Sandwich.
Sandwich is a good one.
Now, it's a good one, but if you wanted to be technical, that guy's last name was Montague. So there was no Sandwich in his name. That was a title, but we'll let you have it.
Okay.
Because we're going to be cool like that.
I appreciate it.
Because we're going to be good like
gracious.
That. Yeah, we're going to be gracious. All right.
By the way, the Stanley Cup name for Frederick Stanley, the 16th Earl of Derby.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it could have been the Derby Cup.
Nice.
The Frederick you get two Cup. Picks.
I'll take Tommy John surgery.
Excellent.
And the Ferris wheel.
Who doesn't love Tommy John surgery?
Yes. And a Ferris wheel.
Don't try to get it on a Ferris wheel, though.
All right. That's right.
Is the Ferris wheel the single saddest and loneliest ride to go on by yourself?
You can have people with you.
No, I'm just saying,
people
like,
want to sit next to you.
Single rider, need a single rider here. Who,
right, exactly.
I think it's a pretty sad ride to begin with.
Oh, well, it could be romantic.
Like, well, if you're right. You throw in a romantic component, maybe it's better.
One of my early dates with Jordan Hamm, State Fair.
Wow.
Have a Ferris wheel picture.
Did you have any deep fried treats after
all
that?
All the deep fried treats. Everything.
A little deep fried ham.
Everything.
The rest, as they say, you know, I've said it for years. The way to a woman's heart is a Ferris wheel and a fried Twinkie.
For those who don't know, the world's exposition, the World's Fair used to be a big deal. It used to be what the Olympics are. Way back in the day, Paris created the Eiffel Tower for the World's Fair. Chicago had it next, and they were tripping because they had nothing to match. And at the last minute, they found this dude who invented a Ferris wheel.
Wow, I thought you were going to say a dude with just a really deep pan and a lot of pizza ingredients.
Okay, what are we going to do? We have all this dough and all this cheese.
Yeah. When the World Fair starts tomorrow.
Right. Okay, so is it my turn?
Jarrett,
did you?
Jarrett!
No, Jarrett. Did you say Sandwich is the only pick you've made?
Yeah, I have a second pick.
Oh, okay,
pick.
So you have a
my
pick.
My second pick, my wife's favorite drink, the Shirley Temple.
Oh,
that's a good one.
That is a good one.
Shirley Temple.
I am going to go with something that brings me much joy, and I did not know this until today, but per an article from the 1940s in San Antonio, nachos were named after a person named Ignacio Anaya, who was called Nacho.
Really?
Yes.
That's actually true.
I never knew that.
You know what, Nami? The Nacho was named after Ignacio. Uh-huh. What was his name again? I had no idea.
Was that Cliff Clavin you were trying to do?
Cliff Clavin, yeah.
I thought that was Norm MacDonald.
Like, so did I.
Can you imagine having one of the world's greatest creations named after you?
Pretty good.
You ever notice that nobody on Cheers except for Cliff, and Cliff is sort of only a version of it, no one has a Boston accent?
Couple of the bit characters did, but you're right.
For how signature a Boston accent is, and it was so synonymous with that city. Okay.
I'm going to go with something named after a set of brothers. Italian brothers. The Jacuzzi Brothers.
That's a good one.
Coming up with the Jacuzzi. That's have you ever had an Arnold Palmer in the Jacuzzi?
Oh,
it is
luxurious.
Delightful.
With a
just
sandwich.
Don't have Tommy John surgery in a Jacuzzi.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with something that has saved hundreds of thousands of lives probably over the years.
Both my ideas.
Henry Judah Heimlich.
And his Heimlich maneuver.
And his maneuver.
Yeah.
What a maneuver.
What a maneuver.
Shout out to Henry Judah. Thank you. Okay.
All right, back to you, Sarah.
I am going to go with something that maybe is not as popular as it used to be, but it was the biggest deal when it came out. The George Foreman Grill.
Oh, that's an excellent one.
Thank you.
Can I admit something?
Yes.
As a
you had one?
As a single man, I have one.
Oh, you do?
And same. I still use it.
Have really?
And
I've had duh.
Constantly disappointed by the results. In fact, I've come to the conclusion that if there was a cooking show on the Food Network where the goal was to make the blandest, worst food, I would be the undefeated all-time champion of that show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can I recommend the Ninja Foodie to you?
You would not be the first to.
Okay.
Named after Arthur Ninja.
That's right. And that will
and
be my
Bob
fourth
Foodie.
Pick in this draft.
All right, my pick, correct?
Yes.
All right, I have to pick this one.
You have to?
I do. General Ambrose Burnside, who popularized
sideburns.
The sideburns.
Is that right?
That's right.
Wow.
Named Burnside,
but
sideburns.
Again, you've gone past sideburns now. Your front burns,
I know,
back
they're going
burns.
Into my mouth burns.
Hey,
yeah.
Burns.
All of then your stuff right. burns. Yeah.
Third degree burns. Dave burns.
Heart burns. Brit burns. I miss
George Burns. I'm back.
That's not my favorite.
That was good. Who's turning?
Nick, you got two picks to create your to finish your team.
Okay. I'm going to take Salisbury steak, the bane of all of our existence back in grade school. And Bananas Foster!
I knew you were, you brought that up in the show meeting.
How can
I knew
I
you
not?
Were, oh, yeah, I knew you were ready for that one.
Such a delicious dessert.
It is good. All right, I got the last my last pick here.
Yep.
Yeah. I am going to go with Flutie Flakes.
Flutie Flakes.
The breakfast cereal named after Doug Flutie.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, man. Okay. With my final pick, I'm going to go with something that Dan named already. The Eiffel Tower. That was also named after its engineer, kind of like the Ferris wheel was.
Hank Very good. Hank Tower.
Hank Tower.
Stop. I can't.
With the last pick, I'm throwing caution to the wind. And as a lifelong devotee of the just hypnotic music of Kenny G.
Oh, boy.
Adolph Sax, who created the saxophone.
That's good.
Wow.
And I'm totally joking about Kenny G. He sucks and will always suck.
I thought I thought for sure you were going to say like elevator music. And I'm like, there's
Johnny Elevator.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great things named after people. I got the Arnold Palmer, the jacuzzi, the Heimlich maneuver, and the saxophone, which sounds like a fun date.
I think
actually.
You're going to win. I think you're
going
to
win, Vinny.
It does.
I don't know.
Sarah's got the Stanley Cup nachos, the George Foreman grill, and the Eiffel Tower.
I think Sarah's going to win it.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
Will Jarrett win with the sandwich, Shirley Temple, sideburns, and Flutie Flakes? And Big Scott.
That does sound like a date with me.
Tommy John.
I mean, that's everything that he is.
Yeah.
Tommy John surgery, the Ferris wheel, the Salisbury steak, and Bananas Foster. We'll get this up on Twitter. You determine the winner of Mock My World at Bickley_Murata. Coming up next, more reaction from Tucson to the Sean Miller firing. We'll be joined by Bruce Pascoe, the Arizona Daily Star. Next, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Dan Bickley and Vince Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Go!
Yeah, big story coming out of Tucson yesterday where the end of Sean Miller's tenure as Arizona's head men's basketball coach happened 12 years on the job. What comes next? Joining us now to talk about that from the Arizona Daily Star, Tucson.com, Bruce Pascoe, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Bruce, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no sweat. Thanks for having me.
I saw your tweet that said you've been updating the story you published today for, since 2017, so yeah. I'm guessing this didn't come as a surprise to you, generally speaking. But what do you make of the timing of this, Bruce?
Well, that's exactly it. It's not a why. It's a sort of a why now thing. And, you know, I mean, there are certainly many different points along the line where they could have made a change, you know, since September 2017, although at that time it was Book Richardson as assistant coach, and there was a thought that maybe it was just Book doing his own thing. And then as they went along, more and more allegations came out, and Arizona had its own investigation. Then they got the letter, the notice of allegations from the NCAA in October, and certainly they knew exactly who was accused of doing what, and at that point a change could have been made. They announced in December that they were going to self-sanction, so they were basically admitting at that point that they knew that some serious things had happened and they could have made a change at that point. They could have made a change after the end of the season right away, which would have given them more time, and they didn't. And then they waited 5 weeks until after the season and decided to do it. So the only thing I can think is that they were using the last 5 weeks to vet out some possible candidates, and once they had one or two people lined up that they knew they could get, then they went ahead and made a change.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then then we should know in a matter of hours or days who it is. And it's probably not so much a search as it's been done.
Yeah.
But if that's not the case, who knows what they're thinking?
No, Bruce, I think that really seems like the most logical conclusion, that they locked in on somebody, they've got him in a back pocket, and then it was time to just kind of like make the move, if you will. Where did it go wrong for Sean Miller, in your opinion? Aside from the allegations that followed a couple of assistants, where did he lose control of all of this?
Well, you know, that's a good question, Dan. I think everything as far as the stuff going wrong really kind of is traced back to this these two investigations between the FBI and the NCAA. So it's hard to say, but I do think as far as on the court, you know, they had a couple of tough losses in 17. They lost in the Sweet 16 to Xavier and, you know, had a chance to go to the Final Four there in Phoenix, and everything seemed to be lined up. And that was frustrating to a lot of people. And then in 18, when they had DeAndre Ayton, of course, they lost to Buffalo in the first round. And that was a big source of frustration as well. And so while this investigation is going on, you have a little bit of frustration on the court. Maybe the team's not achieving to the standards it would like to. And that sort of turned into sort of a downward slide. And, you know, but again, I think that a lot of those things on the court, certainly the last 3 years, have pretty much all been traceable to the investigation going on. I mean, even that 17-18 team that lost to Buffalo, that was a team that lost Book Richardson, who, you know, say what you want about Book, but he was a glue of that team. You know, the players loved him. He was the guy, you know, could relate to anybody, and they didn't have that piece. And then they had, you know, as that season went on, there were some allegations that came out about from the ESPN report that Miller was allegedly doing things, and you know, that didn't help on the court either. And so there was just a lot bubbling up, and that's kind of been the case, honestly, for almost 4 years now.
Bruce Pascoe of the Arizona Daily Star, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. When this news broke yesterday, we were talking about it on the show, Bruce, and I said it would make a lot of sense, especially considering the depths that this program has sunk to go back into that Lute Olson tree, a former player, a former assistant coach under Lute Olson, the glory days of Arizona basketball. And I know there's possibilities out there. Do you get any inkling from the program that is the road that they will go down? And what do you think of that possibility?
Well, they certainly have that option, but I think they're considering, but I don't think that's their primary criteria. And Dave Hickey, the AD, pretty much said that yesterday, that he ruled out that you had to be a head coach. He also ruled out that you had to have Arizona ties. And, you know, I think a couple of guys, particularly Damon Stoudemire, is probably the one that jumps out at me the most, who has both of those things. And he's a head coach at Pacific, which is an extremely difficult job in the WCC, you know, and, you know, he was their coach of the year last year. So, you know, if he would be the kind of guy they could pull over. There's a number of others, Josh Pastner, if he's interested. You know, you go down the line, there are a few that go back to Lute. And Damon actually played under Lute, was an All-American under Lute, and then coached under Sean Miller. So he sort of ties it all up. But that said, I mean, there's a lot of speculation about Tommy Lloyd out of Gonzaga, been their, you know, head assistant, and he's been there for 20 years. He has an incredible international recruiting connection, and that's, I think that might be appealing because of, you know, it's hard to recruit here in Tucson, and you have to go coast to coast and have that international piece if you can, because there's not a lot of talent here, and especially when USC and UCLA are going, it's really hard to get into LA, and that's been a problem for them the last few years. So if you have that international tie, that's a big thing, and it just so happens that right now, the guys that are sitting there on the current roster that a new coach is going to have to re-recruit, a lot of them are international players, so that could help if they happen to hire that.
Bruce, a skeptic might say, look at Bill Self and his lifetime contract and look at Sean Miller in a completely polar opposite outcome and say it's only because the Final Fours were never delivered here, that there are no banners. Is it as simplistic as that, do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that way. I mean, Dave Hickey said himself that it's both on and off the court considerations, that he didn't feel those standards were met. And you could argue that, yeah, Bill Self has a little more equity for what he's done on the court. I think Bill Self, from what I know from just outside, I think he's, maybe also drawn a little bit of sort of equity also from just the way he he you know, appears in public with fans and media, et cetera, and that can't hurt. And then on the other hand, one thing that's worth keeping in mind is that the NCAA allegations against Kansas are quite different, a lot of them, than what's facing Arizona, and that a lot of the Kansas ones kind of center around the idea of whether Adidas is a booster for Kansas or not. And Kansas has been against this from day one. They've been very vocal about fighting it. So for them to go ahead and extend self was just sort of another piece of that, and not really a surprise. Whereas Arizona's got a different set of allegations, mostly involving assistance and sort of the lack of control for Miller, allegedly. And, you know, and they've been very quiet about their support. So it's just a different deal that Kansas would go that direction. But certainly you do wonder about the on the court. How much of a factor is the on the court?
Yeah, last thing before we let you go, Bruce, and we appreciate it. Bruce Pascoe, our guest. There's a lot of talk. And whenever a job like this comes open, the discussion is, how attractive is this job on a national level? And anybody would be a fool to deny that there's not a lot going on for Arizona basketball in a positive light. But on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, how attractive would you rate this job in its current state with everything hanging over this program?
Well, in the short term, it's not very attractive because it has the NCAA hanging over it and not a lot to inherit it unless they can recruit some of these key international players. But in the long term, you know, if you're given a deal for 5 to 7 years and it's, you know, there's a lot of commitment, it's, you know, I'd say it's probably still an 8. And I think even though that with the recruiting being as hard as it can be here, I just think there's not too many places where you have the kind of support and interest, because it's a pretty big metro area here, and, you know, of course, the closest pro teams are up there in Phoenix. So, you know, it's still the biggest game in town, and players like to be that in that environment, and they like to be rock stars walking around, you know, to whatever restaurants or whatever. And there's not too many colleges that really have it. Even a place like UCLA, those guys are, I don't think they're as much, you know, as big stars in their community as the players here are at U of A. So if you can, you know, deal with the interim problems they're going to have, there's some appeal there, and yeah, you know, there's some history, but you know, it's you know, probably still one of the better jobs in college basketball.
Bruce, thanks so much for the time and the insight. Yeah. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Bruce, bud. Pascoe, Arizona Daily Star, Tucson.com. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit CoulterNissan.com.
Arizona Sports Breaking News.
That's breaking news. Not good news for the D-backs. They have recalled infielder, outfielder Andrew Young from the Texas squad, meaning Ketel Marte is headed to the IL. 10-day injured list.